Koshcast joins you after a weekend that saw loads of exciting things happen that didn't mean very much at all. At the Emirates, Arsenal sort of proved that Xhaka can sort of shoot while getting their first victory over the Dark Lord since Gollum fell into the fires of Mount Doom. Elsewhere, this time, it's not lasagna that makes Spurs sick, but there is ham involved, and on Monday, Matic scratches Middlesbrough out of the league. There's also La Liga chat, as Real Madrid leave Tony Adams with Granada to show for his effort, and in Italy, Juve fail to Higuain things up, other than Mihailovic, of course. Finally, we'll talk Toronto FC getting the best victory in Seattle since the Emerald City implemented a $15 minimum wage. Avanti. Hello and welcome to the Koshcast on underthekoshblog.com and at under_thekosh on Twitter. My name is Alex and we have Roche.
Hey, how are you? How's it going?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm decent, yeah.
Good.
It's a nice day outside. So.
It is lovely.
Yeah.
And guess who's back?
Back again.
Mohanen's back.
Yeah, it was close enough.
Yeah. Well, you didn't join in.
Well, yeah, because there was a failure of lyrics over there.
Fair enough. Yeah. Mohanen, how are you?
Fantastic, man. I feel great. I feel refreshed.
Where were you?
I was in Spain. I went to Barcelona, Madrid, Sevilla, Granada. But more importantly, football-wise,
yeah.
I saw two Barcelona games.
Of course.
Which, when we were on our Euro trip last year, we never got to see a Barcelona game, only Brendan Rochet did. So this was something that I really wanted to, you know, take off my bucket list, the Messi thing.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, he scored two goals, Suarez scored a hat-trick, Neymar scored two. This is obviously over two games. I saw them against Espanyol and then Villarreal. So 3-0, 4-1.
When Bernie and I saw Barcelona, they lost at home to Valencia. So you saw two wins.
It was also, I think, their worst ever run of form. They had lost like three games in a row at that time when you guys were there.
Shambolic.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just have one question. Did Messi give you any moments of personal pleasure?
He did. I mean, he did a Panenka penalty. And, I mean, I was gone.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, all right, I'm going to have to go. I'll see you guys all later.
Yeah. That was on your side, your corner flag.
I was on the corner where Neymar absolutely emasculated that guy to then cross it into Suarez, who got the handball, and then Messi took the penalty. And Neymar was just having so much fun on my corner.
Mm.
I was so close too. I wasn't like all the way up at the Nou Camp, or like where it gets really high. And it was just mesmerizing to watch. It was fantastic. I mean, also I was able to, you know, watch up close how bad Andre Gomes is.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
And how bad is he?
He's worse than Rakitic, and that's all you need
to
know.
Well, obviously, Rakitic is brilliant. Let's save this for later, shall we? All right, I don't want to start on a bad note. Why don't we start in the Premier League?
On a very good note.
On a very good note, if you're not Roche. And Bernie, by the way, isn't here because he's in Nigeria getting married.
And
I mean, priority.
That's a very good excuse for Bernie, but last 4 or 5 times that United have been in a spot of bother after a bad result.
He's left you with it.
I have been potting alone with Mohanad and Alex, and here we go again.
All right. Well, let's get into it then. Arsenal 2, Manchester United 0, Arsene Wenger's first league victory over Jose Mourinho.
And Jose Mourinho's like forever, never beating a top 6 side away from home.
Yeah, 900-something days since he's done that.
There's a lot of like flatness to this result, though. Like, I mean, even as an Arsenal fan, I mean, I put myself in an Arsenal supporter's shoes and I'm like, okay, we won, but it's so bittersweet at this point, I can't really enjoy this victory.
My biggest disappointment about this game is how much the hype has died about an Arsenal-United game.
Yes,
like, even as an Arsenal supporter, it's like, back in the day, this was the game. This was up there close to an El Clasico, you know, in the early 2000s, and people would tune in knowing they'd get one of the best games they'll see all year. Now, well, you know, Arsenal, I think the last time both of these teams have played each other when they weren't either of them in the top four was like decades ago, blah, blah, blah. The hype isn't there. Mourinho put out like a weak side, which would have never happened with the, you know, the heyday of the Arsene Wenger, Sir Alex Ferguson. Like,
yeah, and like, you know, speaking about the teams, like, when I was watching this game, I legitimately thought to myself, which team is at the end of a cycle and which team is at the beginning of a cycle? It's hard to... You can go either way with both teams.
I mean, I would say that neither of the... They're both kind of in these weird transition states where Arsenal don't know one end of anything from another. We have no idea what the situation there is. Will they have a new manager next season? No. But, you know, will half the squad go and when they have to make 5 signings? And United, you know that Mourinho will spend a ton of money in the summer. And so that squad will look very different too. But will it actually get any better? We don't know. But the thing with this game is, you're right, the hype has died. This is now the equivalent of, like, Southampton, Everton, yeah, or like, something. Like, you can't get more excited than that.
Even as an Arsenal fan, I couldn't imagine the neutral would be like, yeah, this is not exciting. I mean, I think people would watch something like a Spurs-Liverpool at this point if both games were on.
100%. Oh, that's like, that would be a great game.
Which is a shame. Which is a shame for these two clubs, which were, you know, I mean, I'm sure United will be great again. Arsenal, debatable. But, you know.
You didn't take Trump's political slogan there?
Yeah.
I mean, at this point,
I will take Trump as manager.
Wow. but yeah. You'd put him in goal because he can build a wall. Or I guess he can't. Yeah. But anyway, it was fitting for a game this shit that Xhaka scored from a horrendous deflection.
Well, I have to say, Herrera really pulled out of that one. I mean, he wasn't... I mean,
he didn't really pull out properly, though.
we saw the Coquelin attempt at blocking Rooney's shot.
A cock
Literally, where he kind of Spider-Man himself into the air. Herrera in this one kind of just like looked away, almost did an Arsenal player thing, and then it went off his shoulder over De Gea.
Yeah, this was the most unmanliest moment that Ander Herrera has had this season.
And he likes to pretend that he's tough.
He does. He gives it his all except for this one moment, and it was a perfect deflection. A perfect deflection.
Yes.
Mourinho set up the team to draw. Yep. We know that. He rested a lot of players because he had the Europa League game, and then you know schedule gets a bit crazy for United. And he did really well in setting up this defeat before it even happened, that it's okay, it's expected, don't worry about it. And then even post-game in his press conference, you know when Mourinho just says some random crazy stuff so people forget about the game and just talk about what he's done? He did the same. He talked about the Arsenal fans being happy and Arsenal...
Can I give you the quote?
Yeah, please.
Because it's pretty peak Mourinho, this.
Mm. Yeah.
This is the first time I have seen the Arsenal fans happy. I left Highbury and they were crying. I left the Emirates and they were crying. Today, they had their scarves out and they were singing. Arsenal fans are happy and I'm happy for them. They are a big club. Do not think that I am happy they are not winning trophies.
Unbelievable. It's just, and then that's what everyone talked about. No one talked about the fact that he's never won against the top six side in whatever 900, like, what, 3 years, blah, blah, blah. Like, no one talks about that anymore and he's good at that.
Yeah, I guess he did a good job at diverting the attention away from what actually took place in this game. And what took place was, I think, Axel Tuanzebe made his first appearance of the season.
Axel what?
Tuanzebe.
Yeah.
Tuanzebe.
I thought he was actually pretty good.
He did look quite good, to be fair.
Mourinho did say Alexis will now know his name.
He did so, that.
I mean,
he
that's
did.
Unlikely. Yeah. I don't think Alexis knows anything.
I don't think Alexis knows his teammates. Maybe.
No. But yeah, to your point about how United were set up for the draw in this game, I'm not surprised. They came to stifle Arsenal's game, play on the counterattack, and I think they actually did... In the initial stages, at least, they did a decent job at that.
Yes.
And they might even have had one or two chances to actually score a goal Wayne Rooney hadn't fluffed his lines in front of goal.
That was a horrendous miss by Rooney when he was in one-on-one. The only thing I'll say is, and I agree that Mourinho set up fairly well for the draw, and they were unlucky to go a goal behind, obviously, which changed the game. But one thing that I noticed is that both Ramsey and Xhaka actually had good games.
Yes.
Now, on this form... You have to do something pretty wrong to allow them to have good games. Yeah. And what you do with them is you just pressure them on the ball. And they don't like it. They don't know what to do. But if given time and space, they're quite effective players. And I don't know. I thought United got that wrong, at least in the midfield.
I think, when Ramsey has a good game, it's a bit more on the opposition to, like, why did he allow him to? Because a little bit of pressure and he fluffs his line. He's not very good under pressure. Him and Xhaka played really well. I think holding as well, you have to give a shout out to. The guy played so well against City in the FA Cup. Then he played so well against United here. 2 million by, very young.
Apart from that one back pass.
but which Rooney messed up. But in the end, I think it's really good that we saw Arsene Wenger start with Welbeck up top instead of Giroud. Because in this new formation that he's trying to play, you need that mobility.
Yes.
And it showed with Welbeck scoring the second goal. A header from an Oxlade cross. Oxlade has been fantastic, by the way. And people have likened that goal to the Henri goal from the Boué cross.
Right.
If you remember, it was 10 years ago. I'm just saying it was the
10th anniversary of that goal. But yeah, no, I think that you're absolutely right. In the initial stages, United looked to stifle Arsenal's pressing, and they actually looked like they were going to pass their way out of the tight, high pressing. But then they just started sitting back. And whenever United did have the ball, Arsenal knew that they were going to play a very slow game and kind of just wait for them. So Arsenal also sat back, and it was just a game of patience at that point.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising to see that Xhaka and Ramsey just had all the time in the world to pass the ball around that midfield.
Yeah, that's fair. Just on the Welbeck thing, Arsene Wenger said, "That's the kind of goal you want from Danny. He has all the abilities a striker needs. Hopefully that will give him a boost." And I think that really summed it up, because it's like, he's got everything a striker needs, but it just doesn't translate into goals.
Yeah.
It's like... he does physically, you know, he's intelligent in his runs and stuff, but it just doesn't translate
and,
into
and
it.
That's exactly how United fans felt about him.
Yeah.
And why we sold him to.
Well, it's so frustrating.
I mean, the thing with Welbeck as well is that clearly he's been bought just to score against United. Like, that's all he does.
He's so much better against United than he is against anyone else.
Yeah,
but in the end, I mean, 2-0 to Arsenal, 3 points, which were very needed for Arsenal's fight for the top four. I think that pretty much ends United's kind of hopes for a top four. To get into Champions League, I think they should pretty much focus on winning the Europa League as well, which is very doable. I mean,
as Mourinho said,
1-0 up against, was it Copenhagen?
Celta Vigo.
Oh, Celta Vigo, sorry.
I mean, maybe, although what I would say to that is Arsenal are on 34 games and 63 points. United, 35 games, 65 points.
Right.
If Arsenal win their game of hand, which is not a given, they're only 1 point ahead of United. So if Arsenal is still in it, so are United.
Sure, sure. Other than that, I think, I mean, this game was, again, it wasn't the best of games. It was, you know, not that eventful. Any other points? I think that's pretty much it for me.
No, I'm done.
Yeah, 2-0 to Arsenal. And, well, Marcus Rashford came on and scored, or not scored, had more touches and tackles than Rooney, as well as distance covered.
Rooney missed 6 out of 6 tackles. It was quite funny.
Rooney needs a new club or a new job.
Yeah.
Also, I'd also like to add that at halftime I went on the treadmill to take a run because this game was so boring. And I covered more ground than Wayne Rooney did for 9 minutes.
I'm sure
and you probably
did.
Ran for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So, from that to top of the table?
Chelsea, Middlesbrough. And
well, and bottom of the table.
Yes.
Mm.
And although not officially, Chelsea kind of won it today while relegating Middlesbrough today. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes.
Like
yeah.
But Chelsea, I think, stepped up a gear against an admittedly poor team. But Chelsea were brilliant.
I mean, Fabregas ran this game. He was fantastic in midfield. He looked so good. And Conte is really smart. He knows when to play Fabregas, when to rest him. Same with Pedro. Like Conte needs to make that decision because he's got a few guys and he can't play all of them. Willian, Pedro, and Fabregas cannot all play at the same time. And Conte seems to always make the right decision on which guy to play. He went through his Willian phase, then he went through his Pedro phase, and now he's going through his Fabregas phase. And I think he's managed that quite well.
I agree with you 100%. All I'll say is today, Kante was injured, which made life a bit
easier. Oh, right. Okay.
Which,
sure.
Although, which is a talking point on its own, because that doesn't happen.
Yeah, he was injured, eh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Thigh muscle, apparently.
He also won the Writers Association Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Well, Chelsea are pretty much champions of the league at
yes.
this point. So good for them. But I also like to point out how Middlesbrough took a 2-2 draw to Man City in their last game and then got shit on by Chelsea.
I mean, they got absolutely destroyed today. Chelsea had all the ball, all the possession. Alonso with another goal to make it 6 this season.
Six,
from wing back.
And that's
and
very
three
impressive.
Assists.
You know, I was about to... So, earlier in the season on Fantasy, the top 3 defenders for points scored were Chelsea defenders.
Yeah.
Alonso was one of them. He must be the best one now.
It's risky. It's risky putting them all Chelsea.
Yeah.
But,
the thing is, fantasy football hasn't caught up with the change of formations. So, yeah. You know what I mean? So you've got midfield, like Victor Moses is still a midfielder, but
yeah,
he doesn't get clean sheets and all that kind of thing. Anyway, Cesc, talking about Cesc, has now assisted 10-plus goals in 6 different Premier League seasons, which is more than any other
player. He's the second most assister in the history of the Premier League, and he's played like a gazillion less games than Giggs.
I wish he was likable.
Yeah.
I wish he was likable. He
I
just
mean,
isn't.
I've always said that if Cesc had stayed at Arsenal, continued his trajectory of the improvement that he's been on, he would have been right now being talked about as one of the best midfielders to ever play the game. Had he kind of not went through that Barcelona dip in his career.
The thing was, he wasn't even bad at Barcelona.
No, sure,
not at all,
but it's different. If you do it at the Premier League the whole time, you're on that trajectory. Like, I think he would have really been regarded as one of the best to ever do it in center midfield.
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's ways to argue for that and against. I mean, if you played in Spain, if he was at Barcelona his whole life, which is where he
like
was in the
Iniesta
academy, he would be in the same breath as Busquets.
Sure.
Whereas, like, yeah, I agree with you then in that sense, because I'm pretty much saying exactly what you just said.
One thing I just wanted to point out on this game. It was 2-0 to Chelsea, and I was having a look on Twitter, and an account with 7,000 followers said something completely seriously, and the tweet was, Middlesbrough 2-0 down, can't really see them coming back from this.
Well, like coming back to the Premier League.
I was just like, that is top level analysis, Clive.
Yeah.
They haven't scored 2 goals all season, but they might do it today. Like,
yes.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. Middlesbrough were really bad this game. But to add to the point about Alonso's 6 goals, I think me and you, Alex, were talking today about how Chelsea get all these goals not from their goal scorers. Because really, their only kind of flair or goal scoring threats are Hazard and Costa. And Hazard doesn't even chip in with that much. I wrote that article about the PFA team of the year, and Hazard doesn't even have that many goals. He's just very effective in other ways. So it's really just Costa. He has 20 goals right now.
Yeah, you got what? Like a few from Willian, from Pedro.
And Matic. Matic has got a
Matic now is now on three,
you
I
have
think.
Six from K. Like you have Cahill crazy numbers bunch, from defense.
A real team effort. And it's shown all season. Chelsea have been the best team in the league.
For sure, for sure.
Unfortunately for Tottenham.
Yep, so that's Middlesbrough down with Sunderland. That leaves one more spot to go. But let's move on to why Chelsea are kind of pretty much won the league. It's again because Tottenham missed their chance to keep on the pressure by bizarrely losing to West Ham 1-0. Tottenham were on, a 9-game winning streak.
Yeah.
They looked unstoppable.
And they just beat Arsenal.
Yeah, they looked unstoppable. Everything was great. And then they...
I mean, losing to West Ham at the end of the season is becoming a bit of a tradition.
Yeah.
They always beat them earlier in the season and then lose to them later. It's kind of unfortunate for the title race because it looked like it might be exciting until the last week. But Tottenham, this was weird. I mean, they weren't particularly bad. They weren't as good as they have been recently, but they had chances to win it. Adrian made a couple of very good saves, including one from Kane, and then the Dier header from the corner. And then,
to be fair, there was a spell where Tottenham should have scored like 3 goals.
Yeah,
yeah.
And once that didn't happen, it seems like West Ham just held on. They got their goal, and they just, again, held on. It's like they held on, got their goal, held on.
And then held on again.
Yeah. It was a 1-0 capitulation from a Spurs standpoint.
Lanzini's a player I really like.
Do you like it because he only scores against Spurs?
Yeah.
So the question here is, I mean, Tottenham were also on a run last season where they were chasing Leicester, and it looked like they would have usurped Leicester at the top. So are they choking at the end?
I wouldn't say so.
Harsh, yet there is something to it.
Well, the thing is this. If you say, I've read a lot of Spurs fans, like obviously because Arsenal fans are all online, we're always like goading them on and all, but Spurs fans were saying something that I think makes a little bit of sense, which is, if we're never expected to be there, then maybe it's not choking. Choking is almost like, you're expected to be there, this is what you should be doing, and you failed short of the mark. But the fact that Tottenham have come now second 2 seasons in a row, unfortunately, it's annoying to say, but it is an achievement.
They didn't actually come second last year.
They did bottle second.
On the last day, they slipped to third. But I think the point stands. There really isn't any reason, and I've said this before, beyond Pochettino's brilliance, that they should be in this position.
Sorry.
Financially, what?
Who was second last season?
Arsenal.
What? On the last day of the season?
Point. Rubbish,
yeah,
bollocks. Bollocks.
Well, they didn't deserve it, but still. there isn't really any reason that they should be in this position beyond the kind of development that Pochettino has done. So I do take that argument. On the other hand, it's just disappointing for them that they've lost a game that they really should have won. So,
true.
Well, I mean, at least they still have that finishing above Arsenal this season to hold on to. That's an achievement.
And that's a good point. I don't think we should brush over that because it is a big deal. It is. Arsenal fans always make fun of them for it. 21 years, whatever. And, you know, no St. Tottenham's Day and all that. And that is a big deal. I mean, well,
sure.
Arsenal fans now will be like, haha, look at you celebrate. But, you know, if you're going to give it, you got to take it. So.
Sure.
Yeah. That's good. Wise.
Wow. Let's do the quiz before we
sure.
talk some more. Because
right.
I missed it.
Okay.
Welcome to our Crystal Palace.
Yes.
This week.
Quite.
Yeah. Let's hope they stay up now that we've used them in the quiz.
I think they should.
Big Sam. Anyways, the quiz, as always, brought to you by Open Sports, which is an app you can download on Android, iOS, all that good stuff, to find local sports happening in your area. Kickabouts, pickup, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're interested in the soccer portion, football, whatever you want to call it.
Not field hockey?
Not field hockey, but they do cool stuff, so you should check them out.
I have once played on a pitch after people were playing field hockey.
Yeah.
They're vicious.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're quite vicious.
Anyway, Mohamed.
You guys ready for the quiz?
Yeah.
Riche, remind us you're buzzing.
That was easy.
And Alex. All right, here we go. Let's hope you guys do better than the last quiz that I heard.
I can see through the paper with that sunlight.
Okay, question number one. Messi just joined the list of players with 500-plus goals for one club. Name as many others as you can who have done the same.
That was easy.
Pele.
Yes. Do you know for who?
Santos.
Yeah, well, Roche still gets that.
Yes.
Anyone else? There's one more you should get. The rest you won't.
Romario.
Nope.
Good shout.
Play for Bayern?
500 goals for Bayern?
Yes.
Oh, Gerd Müller.
Well done.
Oh. That was the answer last week, or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, Gerd Müller. Yeah, it was twice.
Mm.
The rest, I mean, I'm not going to name them because... they're tricky. But someone did it for Celtics, Slavia Prague, Lisbon, cool okay. stuff. Okay? Question number two.
Eusebio.
No. Oh. I mean, I would expect you to get
Henrik Larsson.
No. Okay, we're not going through every Terry.
Get on with it.
Question number two. John Terry recently announced he's leaving Chelsea.
Bellend.
Wrong. Well, I mean, close. But how many league titles has he won? Alex.
Six.
Nope.
Three.
Nope.
Four.
Yes.
Ah! Is that a... All right.
I mean, you went six. That was way too much.
Sure.
That's in the 04-05, 05-06, 9-10, 14-15, and then probably... The fifth one will be this season.
So it could be five, and Alex is close. But I'll take the point. Thanks.
Last question. What is the closest Adebayor has gotten to the Champions League trophy?
That was easy.
Semifinals.
No. Is this a trick question? Like
no.
Physically, how close
no,
is it?
No, not physically. Semifinals is not the answer. Alex.
Quarterfinals.
No. Okay, that's it. The answer is runner-up with Monaco in the 03-04 season.
Oh! Ooh, yeah, nice. Nice. Yeah. Nice. That's a good one.
Thank you.
There had to be one good question.
Yeah,
yeah,
there was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Manchester City.
Five.
Crystal Palace.
No.
Great result for the citizens.
Great timing by Richard.
They needed this, even though their season is over.
Yeah, so Crystal Palace is one of those, like, will they make it, will they not make it? Because they had this crazy run, and Alex wrote about it, and how it looked like they're doomed. But then they beat
everyone.
Liverpool, Arsenal, and Chelsea.
Yes.
Which was incredible. And I think I was talking to my brother, saying, if Palace right now were, like, in the Europa League zones, and they got these three wins, let's say, they'd be pushing for a top four spot.
And as I said last week, Allardyce would get the England job.
Yeah,
again. Yeah.
Crystal Palace, with 8 games played, had the second highest form ranking in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Until the last 2 weeks, of course.
Yeah, it was incredible. But then City was one too much.
Vincent Kompany's finish.
Ooh!
That was probably their best finish all season.
That curling into the post, that angle...
Yeah.
I don't think the cameras even had the right position for that.
Probably not.
The right lens.
Probably not. I mean...
Yeah, the right lens.
Kompany
exactly.
scored. You know who does have the right lens? Dick Advocaat.
Hey, well done.
But he has no ears.
That is also true.
Because you know with Kompany, it's usually the wide lens.
Yeah, you need the biggest lens you can possibly get. Kompany and Otamendi scored. That's how you know it's a good day. And that's how you know it's a bad day
for
Crystal Palace.
Also, Kevin De Bruyne scored, and in his form, you now know that Crystal Palace had a bad game. He scored like 3 in 25 or something ridiculous. Like he's been on really bad form.
He had a goal and 2 assists in this game, but I just want to point out how bad Crystal Palace's goalkeeper was. Because...
Hennessy.
Wayne Hennessy, he got his hand to a few.
Was he drunk?
He got his hand to a few. He could have saved Kevin De Bruyne.
It's that
goal.
Weak wrist. It's that Chesney weak wrist.
Mm.
Yeah.
Except for Vincent Kompany's goal.
Yes.
That was the goal of the day.
Oh, it was fabulous. And just to balance out Mohamed's bashing of De Bruyne there, he does have 15 assists, which is apparently more than like any other City player ever in a season.
Oh, what do you mean, ever?
Yeah.
Even David Silva.
Well, that's the thing. Speaking of David Silva, I was going to say, he played a much better game, for example.
Oh, he's been brilliant.
He's for the past, I'd say, 4 or 5 games, Silva has run the show.
Yes.
He's looked so good for City, and I've been super impressed. And Silva, we talked about him, I think, 2 podcasts ago. We said that stat about him, like, whatever, the most chance created since he got to Premier League. And he's a class player. He's one of... Like, no one hates David Silva. He's so likable.
No, he is... In that league, that when I think about him and like players like him and Santi Cazorla, who could have played in like Pep's Barcelona team and won everything, but just due to circumstance. In fact, I think both of them were actually somewhat close to signing for Barcelona at various points.
And Rodwell.
And obviously Jack Rodwell as well. But, you know, it's just, it's not that he hasn't had a good career, but it could have been something else.
Yeah.
But right move.
But the
you know
problem
I mean?
Is you've got 11 players. In, let's say, the Pep team or the whoever team. And unfortunately, it can't be all. Yeah, I know
of course,
what you mean.
Anyway. So 5-0 to City, and they're pretty much in the top four.
It's not cut and dry. I mean, they've played 35. They were on 69 points. So United are 4 points behind. Arsenal will be 3 points behind if they win their game in hand. But City are also only 1 point behind Liverpool. So it's all a mess.
Yeah, you know,
but it's more or less in their hands.
It is in their hands for sure.
The top four as we see it right now, it would take something to happen for either Arsenal or United to make that top four.
Yes, things do need to happen.
I mean, things like Liverpool drawing with Southampton 0-0.
Ah,
I mean, that is something that happened.
This was the worst game. I mean, I thought it would be Sunderland-Watford, but it turns out it was Liverpool-Southampton.
Well, it was Liverpool and the reserve side. Basically, their feeder club.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also, James Milner's penalty miss was not his fault.
Yeah, it wasn't a miss.
It was a save.
I'm so glad he said that, because I was talking to Alex about this, and Alex was like, did you see Milner's penalty? And I was like, I was waiting to see the mess up. And it was brilliant. He struck it well. He hit it true. It was going to that bottom corner, and it looked amazing. And then I don't know how Forster went down so quick with such a strong wrist.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Great wrist for a big man.
Yeah. So I think he just picked a side and he just gave it his all and to get there.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, he's about 7 foot, so if he goes the right way early enough, he can reach just about anything. It's just a question of timing.
It was a great handball, though, for the penalty where the defender, like, he almost like did that chicken dance thing
hit out there with his elbow. We recently saw a very, very precise penalty from Harry Kane that went straight into the side netting.
Against Arsenal.
And I'm wondering if Milner's penalty was equally as accurate.
It wasn't. I'll tell you why. Kane didn't actually hit it true. If you look at
it. He hit it into the ground, right?
Yeah. Milner hit it just right. I know. Anyways, it was a great save.
But on Milner, hasn't missed one since November 2009.
He's been very good at them, to be fair, including this one.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to put your hand up and say, you know, keeper made the save.
He's another one that fantasy football has screwed over, because he's still a midfielder.
Yeah. I mean, Liverpool don't keep clean sheets anyway. So
true.
Something quickly about Sturridge. He came on, or was playing, whatever it was, and, you know, he's had his haircut and all that. And he's clearly not going to be at Liverpool next season.
Not with that haircut. No,
it's very clear. I mean, he doesn't fit the Moreno style. But, question is, where could he go? Because I was talking to Alex today, and I was saying, if it weren't Liverpool-Everton thing, I could see him as a good replacement for Lukaku once Lukaku leaves Everton. But it won't happen because of the Everton connection.
And that's exactly what I was going to say out of my mouth. For the first club, Everton would be a perfect club for him.
But let's assume that can happen because of the rivalry.
I actually wouldn't assume that. I think times have changed. I mean, there have been people that have transferred between them before.
Yeah.
Nick Barmby, for example. But I'm not sure. Like, Liverpool fans aren't going to care very much. Because they don't really like him in the first place. And Everton fans would take him because they're getting the player. So they don't mind. And I don't think he would feel any particular loyalty to Liverpool at this point.
Question is, where would he go? Where else could he go?
I mean, Southampton's a reasonable shout. I think, frankly, any team just outside the top four.
But Sturridge has, he could play left back. Sturridge has this thing I feel about him where he has this pride. He feels he's slightly better than he is, or he has really big trust in his abilities. And I don't think he wants to get, he'll feel like a demotion going into a Southampton or even an Everton slightly. Like, I feel he
what
has
about
trust
a Leicester?
In his...
The thing is that it's all about style of play, right? Leicester play this really intense, high-octane, physical,
and
that's what he doesn't really engage in. I actually think, like, what would actually be best for him stylistically would be Italy. He would be fantastic in Italy, presuming he's
stayed fit. There's not enough British guys out there.
No, there aren't. But, you know, he could call up Mika Richards. He could be like, how is life in Florence?
Or he can join Granada.
Sure. Yeah, they'll take anyone.
Yeah.
Or Las Palmas.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we will.
Moving on, speaking of Everton, they are an incredibly frustrating team. They lost to Swansea 1-0. Swansea, which, by the way, really needed this win to now... We'll talk about other results, but to now put the whole relegation thing in their hands by, you know, coming out of the relegation zone.
Yes.
And I read reports about this game, and it was they were saying that they have never seen a Stadium of Light, right? Liberty Stadium.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Second time. Liberty Stadium, they've never seen it this buzzing. They've never seen it this intense. And apparently the atmosphere was fantastic. They really riled the team on, and they deserved their win.
And you know, I watched this game and I saw that Everton clearly had no motivation. If you look at the table, they're not making the top four. And they're not going to be usurped by West Brom, who are like 13 points behind
them. Playing football once they hit 40 points.
And to be fair, Everton have also stopped playing football, because I think Llorente scored with his face.
Pretty much. I mean, this is the thing that's funny about Swansea's survival, is if they make it, it will be because this team, who is known for playing attractive football and 4-3-3 and getting on the... All they do is put it in the mixer for Llorente. Like, that is the only thing that has worked for them this season, other than Gylfi Sigurdsson being good. And it's just funny.
You know, a parallel theme from a couple of years ago, Michu was carrying this team.
Yes.
The long, lanky Spaniard, Michu.
It's the same thing again.
And now it's not a lanky Spaniard, but it's this massive, big bloke. target man, Llorente.
Yeah. No, I agree. But speaking of Sigurdsson, is he ever going to leave to Everton? I mean, again, another replacement for Everton is sell Ross Barkley, sell Lukaku, get Sigurdsson and Sturridge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Sigurdsson will leave this summer, presumably.
Unless, I mean, every summer we say this, though.
No, but, like, Swansea have never been this bad.
Sure.
Like, even if they stay up, if they don't make significant investment, he will probably leave. And he's one of their only saleable assets. So if they actually want to make some money, they'll need to get rid of him.
Yeah.
But he could be playing for a team like Everton.
I agree with that. But at the same time, I don't know where he would go. I don't know where you could say, okay, whatever club he goes to, so Sigurdsson's going to be number one on the team
Southampton
sheet.
Everton.
Yeah.
That bracket. Leicester.
Well, they only play 4-4-2.
But but Swansea have every chance in the world to be exactly where those clubs are.
He would make the Arsenal team, and the way like,
oh dear.
Like Wilshere, Ramsey, Coquelin, all these people.
Yeah, but
like,
he plays in the number 10 role.
Yeah, but he can play centre mid.
I mean, he's more productive than Ozil. So, I mean, quite literally, he could
get in the team. I mean, as a sub, like when City bring on Fernando or Delph or whoever, if they bring on a Sigurdsson, that's way better.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs need backup for Eriksen. He could go back there.
I can't believe what I'm hearing, but...
I mean, he's better than Ander Herrera.
I think, valid, sure. On this game week, sure, but not all game weeks. But I really think he's comfortable at Swansea.
Sure. He's also... He's not just comfortable. That's unfair. Like, it makes it sound like he just sits there and takes the money and does nothing. He carries them. He's comfortable, but he also relishes the challenge, which is good for him.
Yes.
Anyways, the reason it's in Swansea's hands is because Hull lost to Sunderland.
Mm-hmm.
2-0. Sunderland
at home.
At home.
Marco Silva's home record has now been broken.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, him and Mourinho in the same week.
We recently had a throwback Thursday article praising Marco Silva's home record, but still wishing for Hull to be relegated. I think that was specifically my paragraph.
That's correct, yeah.
Unfortunately, I mean, Hull will, you know, by the looks of things, get relegated, which is great. But unfortunately, Marco Silva lost his home record.
How is it great? I like Hull a lot.
I don't know. I just think Hull is a useless, dark, shambolic team.
I think that's dark.
Yeah. Like, when I think about Hull City, I'm just like, okay.
Like the place. He doesn't like the place.
Okay, fair enough. Just checking. No, I think the thing is exactly what you said. Everyone's really impressed by Marco Silva. But Hull itself is nothing to get excited about. So what we want is Hull to go down so that Marco Silva gets a good job. And then we can see him work his magic in the Premiership at a decent team.
Replacing Coleman. Everybody's going to Everton.
Yes.
Everybody's going to Everton.
Or Arsenal.
But guys, come on. Yeah. We can't forget about Sunderland. I mean, what a performance. 2 goals.
Okay, whoa.
I mean, the world will forget about Sunderland.
Yes.
Just before pod started, for our listeners specifically, there was a comment made by one of us, Kosh Boys, and the comment was something along the lines of, what is the point of Sunderland winning a game now?
Yeah, yes, well, correct. Like, but it was so predictable that they would finally do it after they've been relegated.
When the pressure's off. But also, why, like, kind of ruin a fellow relegatee's chances? It just doesn't feel right.
It feels like
a stab in the back.
It's a useless win. This is so Moyes-esque. After the fact, no one cares. It doesn't even matter what you do, and you went and won.
Yeah. Well, another player, is Defoe going to go somewhere?
Yeah, 100%. He's on a free, so he's gone.
How old is he now?
34, but he's still banging them back up somewhere. Bournemouth,
Swansea.
Sure.
Yeah.
Everton.
Who needs a striker? United?
But the person that was actually in the shop window here was Jordan Pickford, because he has made about 4,000 saves this year. And it's easy to do that when you're Sunderland and you're being shot at constantly by everyone. So, like, he's going to make the saves. But he was actually brilliant here. And he will probably get a move to someone who needs a keeper.
Yeah, he should.
I feel like Liverpool might buy another Sunderland goalkeeper.
Right, right.
And ruin them.
Yeah.
Let's run through these last results really quickly before we move on. Bournemouth drew with Stoke 2-2. This is just the middle of the table. No one cares. You know, nothing too exciting. Burnley drew with West Brom 2-2 as well.
Yes. Pulis taking a line out of Arsene Wenger's book by saying, people who have been giving us stick don't understand. We will make a massive profit at the end of this season. The club is run very professionally.
Oh, shut up, Pulis.
When did he start caring about that? What has that got to do with anything?
Got to do with nothing. Leicester beat Watford 3-0.
Yep. 3 games to go. Leicester are ninth. Check this out. Yep. Leicester are ninth, but only secured mathematically their survival mathematically with this win. So, like, anyone from 10th below can still be relegated.
So they're going to finish in the second half of the table after apparently they're going to get relegated and all that. And
imagine if they'd had Shaky for the whole season.
Who?
Shaky.
Oh, your pal, Shaky.
They'd be Europa League, mate.
Right, they would be. Anything else on the league? I mean, it looks top four fight. top of the table is pretty much done. Top four fight is still on, and one more team to get relegated.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff. Let's move on to Move of the Week.
Yeah. Yes.
Happy Momo. One thing we are no sha, Momo no fit sleep forever. One day Momo go wake up.
Moomoo of the Week time now, and Moomoo of the Week is brought to you, as always, by Football Heads. That's F-U-T-B-O-L, headswithaz.com. They are an apparel brand bringing you the freshest snapbacks, beanies, and t-shirts to wear with their awesome customized football club-oriented designs. And our listeners get 15% off. All you got to do is type in UTC at the checkout. Can be lowercase, uppercase.
Yeah, it's really simple, guys. All you got to do is type UTC.
Yeah.
If you don't make use of that discount, I don't know.
I mean, you also have to buy a hat.
Well, yeah.
You can't just type UTC and keep getting $15.
You can just stare at the discount and be like, ooh, that's lovely. Anyway,
they could probably use that discount every time.
That would be Momo.
Yes, granted. You know what else is Momo?
Actually, before we move on, I just like to explain Momo. Because new listeners, Momo is a word in Pidgin English which Bernie introduced to us, which means fool or idiot. And we like to point out people who fit that category in the world of football during the week.
So, outside of the field.
Off the field, yes.
Out. Yes. The Dutch have done it this week, mm-hmm. again, by appointing Dick Advocaat as their national team manager for the 400th time.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, guess who his assistant is?
Van Nistelrooy.
No, worse.
Bert Van Marwijk.
Close, but no.
The bald, short hair guy.
Marco Overmars.
No.
Dennis Bergkamp.
Clover.
It's Ruud van Nistelrooy. It's not. Ruud Gullit. I'm getting my Ruuds mixed up.
Oh,
it was very rude of me.
That was rude, yeah.
Yeah, it's Ruud Gullit. I don't know, if you've ever watched him on TV, he is a complete moron.
Is that who Rihanna was singing about in Rude Boy?
Wow. Wow. No.
Okay. All right. This is asking.
Although,
kind of fit the bill.
I just want to read to you Holland's last kind of sequence of managers, right? Because Louis van Gaal, Dick Advocaat, Marco van Basten, Bert van Marwijk, Louis van Gaal, Guus Hiddink, Dick Advocaat.
I mean, they just keep going back to what they know.
What do they have? What else do they have?
I mean, there's Philip Cocu, Van Bronckhorst is doing a wonderful job at Feyenoord. Someone on Twitter, I apologize, I forget your name, but told me that they looked at Roger Schmidt from Leverkusen. That would have actually been quite interesting.
Someone else on Twitter did say that he felt that managers, esteem managers, are staying away from international jobs because they are less exciting.
Ah, yes, Steve McGovern.
Yeah.
Friend of the pod.
Now, have they ever had a non-Dutch manager?
I don't think they have.
So maybe that could be a policy they need to revisit.
Well, I agree.
They're running out of Dutch people.
Well, it sounds like they looked at Roger Schmidt, who I think is German, right? But anyway, yeah. They have run out.
Yeah, that's a good moo-moo. I have one from Italy. Napoli have partnered up with Tinder... shockingly, and there's an article right now on a legitimate football website, like main website, and it says Napoli urge fans to contact Arkadiusz Milik on Tinder and wish him well. But there's more to this article. Having partnered up with the dating app, the Serie A side have announced that supporters will be able to use it to contact Milik directly with messages of support.
DMs. Yeah, slide into that DM.
What's more...
Just don't injure him again.
What's more, Milik will then be tasked with selecting four fans who will then have the opportunity to meet him in person.
So four swipes to the right. Well, four I swipes. Mean, here's my question, though. The fans that want to meet Milik are going to be 90% male fans, football fans.
You don't know that.
I mean, I can assume that. I can fairly assume that. So now the guys in Napoli that want to find them have to turn their Tinder preference, who might have them on girls before, now have to turn them into male to find Milik.
It's a good point.
But I'd like to caveat that the guys in Napoli who are trying to find Milik have probably already found him because they're all part of the mob.
True.
So who's left?
They're all on Tinder. So it's a Tinder mob.
I look forward to seeing who he selects. I really do.
So we've got Holland, we've got Italy. I've got one from Macedonia.
Obviously.
So the tweet obviously started with, meanwhile in Macedonia, and you know it's going to be good.
Yep.
So it's a league game, and the player gets injured, and the ref calls on for the ambulance, or people, or whatever, the medics. And off the screen, all you see is literally a guy on a Segway,
good.
Pushing a wheelbarrow that has a cross on the front. And he's actually zooming, like, there's smoke coming out of the back of the Segway. He's zooming onto the field, and he goes up to the player, lifts him up, puts him in the wheelbarrow.
That's quite strong.
And then the Segway pushes the wheelbarrow all the way back off the field. Like, he's just having fun.
So it's legit. Like,
yeah.
It worked.
It was him. It wasn't like some... It was fantastic.
Right. The only problem with that is, you know, if someone's got a serious injury,
yes,
putting you in a wheelbarrow puts you at a very odd angle.
His leg, yeah, you can't be like flat.
You can't be straight.
No.
Was everyone laughing?
I mean, the other players seemed a bit perplexed, like this is the first time this has happened.
Was the wheelbarrow faster than Modu Barrow?
Modu Barrow is very fast.
He is very quick.
He is very quick. But yeah, that's mine. That's mine.
I like it.
Cool.
Happy Momo. One thing we are no sha, Momo no fit sleep forever. One day, Momo go wake up.
La 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 liga da 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 da. Mohamed, did anyone sing this to you while you were in Spain?
No,
wrong country,
I was not serenaded.
He was not in Mexico.
Wow, what?
It's
Alabamba is a Mexican classic.
It's in Spanish, so it's okay.
Mohamed, continue.
I mean,
I apologize if I've offended anyone.
More crazy than that, I have something more crazy. Las Palmas have offered Balotelli a one-year deal.
Yes!
Yeah.
Kevin Prince-Boateng and Mario Balotelli back together at last.
I don't think any manager wants that kind of responsibilities on his shoulders.
Las Palmas do.
Yeah, Las Palmas.
To be fair, I offered him a deal for 1 year as well.
Doing what? Setting fireworks off in your bathroom?
Playing in a dance league for UTC.
Yeah. I mean, he would do quite well.
Yeah, he would.
If
but
he
then,
showed up.
But then he was like, "What? How will you make my tea?" And Roche said, "In a microwave." And he said, "No, never." Yeah.
So that's our Las Palmas news.
Yeah.
Real Madrid keep their place top of the table by beating Granada 4-0.
They're actually not top of the table.
Well, okay, game in hand, I apologize. But yeah, they've, again, all their subs played, which is basically like 300 million worth of talent.
This was a rotated 11.
Yeah.
And it was 4-0 in 34 minutes in this game.
Yeah, it was definitely rotated, especially when Benzema came on. It was rotund.
Wow,
that point.
Rotund.
Benzema, the Real Madrid fans have such a love-hate relationship with Benzema. It's amazing. Like it's always on form. Like Ronaldo can have a dip, Bale can have a dip, whatever, Modric can have a dip, and it's fine. We still understand that he's good players. Benzema, it's all about how he's playing at the time. We love him, he's doing great, and now we hate him, he's doing really bad. And seriously, he's missing so many chances. Morata should be playing over him. I don't know why he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that's kind of the Bernabeu, like, you know, that's
right.
Their standard thing. I mean, they'll whistle Ronaldo. They whistled Ronaldo a few weeks ago.
And he told them not to.
Yeah. And, you know, he might be one of the few people that they'll listen to. But it's interesting. It is interesting because if you look at the front three, and Gab Marcotti was writing about this today in his musings or whatever the thing is called. So the BBC are averaging a goal every 150 minutes this season between them. But the second string, Morata, Asensio, Vazquez, have won every 190 minutes. But if you take penalties out of the mix, the difference is 181 and 190. So, like, the backup are doing pretty much just as well as the starting players.
Well, that's what's really helping Zidane this season, is that he has a squad. Madrid actually now have a squad. For a team that spends this amount of money, they should have two strings. And we're seeing that this season, where for the past few weeks since, you know, they've been in the latter stages of the Champions League, he's been playing that second string.
Yeah.
And that second string has players like, you know, James and Asensio and Morata. Asensio has been great. He's taken over the pecking order from Lucas.
He's fast.
He's
a fast player.
Such a nice left foot. But yeah, I mean, speaking of BBC, not to say anything, but they have 35 goals.
We'll say something.
So they have 35 goals combined in the league.
Not bad.
Messi has 35.
MSN has 100.
So they're not... Well, not in the league.
Well, if you look at the goal difference...
Like, they're not really producing crazy numbers this season.
No, I mean, this is the thing. If you look at the goal difference between Barcelona and Real Madrid, it's not even close.
Yeah.
It's not even close. But you're looking at a season in which Bale has been on and off. Benzema, as you said, has been
rotund.
Yes, always. He's never been on a roll, despite... and Ronaldo has slowed down. He's been brilliant anyway with... you know, his goals, but more so in the Champions League than in the league. And so then you're looking at Morata, Asensio and Vazquez, and they're almost more exciting at this point. Not just because we've seen the other guys for years, but because they're a bit more dynamic, they're a bit more fluid, and they play for each other in the way that MSN plays for each other, as opposed to Bale, Benzema and Ronaldo, who are more individuals that end up working together.
True, I agree. But either way, Zidane, again, we keep talking about, is it brilliance, is it just... luck, is it a one season wonder kind of thing, blah blah blah, but he's done well to pick his teams at the right moments and not overplay players and make the right decisions. And you know what? So far, it's paid off. And Madrid could be the first team in history to win back-to-back Champions Leagues. They could win the double this season with the league.
They very well could be.
Yeah, it's insane.
I mean, it's looking like a Real Madrid-Juventus final, and that will be astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, the Champions League semifinals have... We thought it would be closer, but pretty much two teams are quite through at this point.
You know, I actually like Juventus in that final.
Yeah. Oh, you think they'll win?
I think Madrid will win. Juventus will play the game better, but Madrid always come up with the goals. Just look at Ronaldo. Ronaldo, I was watching this game with my brother in Spain, and actually, just to touch on that, against Atleti, Madrid played an absolute clinic. Like, it was top football as a team, in transition, the way they set up, everything about them was perfect.
Was it magisterial?
It was magisterial. And Ronaldo got literally three goals. Mm. And that's all it takes. And we have someone like Ronaldo. You look at his heat map, he's way above Benzema. He's literally their number nine.
So this is something I actually wanted to discuss, because you've got Ronaldo who's transitioning to a striking role, essentially. There's not really any point in him being out on the left. No. Then you've got Benzema who's in and out, and then you've got Morata, who has shown when he's been played that he is very, very good. Now, next season, Morata will leave if you don't guarantee him some playing time.
He said if Benzema doesn't leave, he'll leave.
This is the thing.
Yeah.
Now, if you're Real Madrid, I mean, in my opinion, you get rid of Benzema because he's over. He's over.
Yeah, he's been at Madrid for 10 years now.
And he's done very well to stay there for that long. But the point is, he's not going to get better, right? Like, he's on the decline.
Yeah.
So you make Morata the guy that splits the time with Ronaldo.
Also, it saves you so much money.
Yes.
Like, you've got Morata already there. You're going to make money off the Benzema sale. Instead of going for 100 million Aubameyang or whatever you want to do, you have the guy sitting right there. Just let him play.
But Florentino Perez is an idiot, and he probably will spend 100 million.
But this is the thing. If you do that, you can spend it on the left-sided attacking midfielder rather than the striker.
Ooh,
which
Marcelo?
Is easier. Good.
Good question.
Well, they did just sign... They signed a left-back, Teo Hernandez, who they bought from Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
Which is quite something.
Yeah.
They just paid his release clause. So maybe, you know, they could play him left back and then put Marcelo up.
Marcelo would be better than 90% of the wingers in this world. Anyways, moving on. Barcelona beat Villarreal 4-1.
And you was there.
I was there. Actually, the first half was quite shaky. Barca had all the possession, like all of it. And what surprised me from both Barcelona games I saw is how much the ball, because you don't see it in highlights. You gotta watch the full 90 minutes. Ter Stegen and Piqué and Umtiti, they're just playing a rondo all game. It's just the three of them giving each other the ball in the tightest of places. Umtiti's surprisingly good on the ball. Ter Stegen, he's literally in his 6-yard box playing the ball across his goal to like Piqué, Alba, whoever, who are coming all the way to the corner flag to receive.
I mean, there's a reason Pep wanted him.
Yes, it's scary. It's actually scary to watch, but so much fun.
Tell us something else that we can't see on TV when you're watching Barcelona.
You can't see how much Messi just walks around.
Okay.
He walks around.
Like
just
a pigeon.
He just walks around waiting for that moment.
Until he gets the ball and then he explodes.
Yes.
It's kind of like you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
That's what Mohamed's trying to do. He's trying to mirror his game out of...
But Messi's by choice.
Messi.
Right. Yeah.
But it's literally, it's the back. It's all in the back that you don't see in the highlights. It's just the pass. And then you get Busquets who drops in between. You see the two center backs split.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually really fun to watch a game live because you can pick where you want to look. And, you know,
the
one thing I noticed about Barca watching these games is Suarez is a very good player, but he needs a bit more service than other people.
Sure. Did you notice that Suarez runs around like a madman?
Suarez runs around with his hands flailing around and his head like bobbling around in all directions.
Absolutely.
He's insane.
He's one of those guys where you're really glad he's a footballer, because otherwise you'd be worried about him.
Yeah.
He'd be in jail, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's crazy. Yeah. He's literally... I see him run after a ball, I'm like... 90,000 people know that's going out. Why are you chasing it down? Like, it makes no sense.
Did he get
you know?
It?
Well, I mean, sometimes he gets stuff and I'm like, wow, okay. Like, no one else thought you were. Anyways, great. First half was
tight. Reminds me of Jamie Vardy, really.
First half was tight, and then Barcelona in the second half. Villarreal got tired.
So this is the part when they were coming towards your end of the stadium.
And then it was like 3-1, 4-1, and Neymar was just having so much fun in my corner. It was incredible to watch. When Neymar's in the mood,
so this was the part where Neymar did the turn and flicked the ball over the defender right in front of your eyes.
So he ran towards me as he was running towards the corner flag, stopped the ball, and then did that pirouette and flicked it over the guy's head. And the guy just looked so deflated.
Did he give you a wink?
Oh, yeah.
Cheeky wink.
He was like, that's for you, Mo.
He was pretty much doing like the running of the bulls. Like he was cooking. He was like cleaning.
And then after he scored...
He had enough time to drop it to his knees and do like a little somersault, little circle.
After he actually flicked it over the guy, he raised his shirt over his head and it said UTC, right. Listen to the Koshcast. I don't know if you guys saw that.
No, I did, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he also called me on speed dial.
He did. FaceTimed you the flick.
Pretty much.
Anyway, so Barcelona keeping the pressure on Madrid. At this point, Madrid really should have this wrapped up. And they should, I think they won the double this season.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be interesting if Juventus lost another Champions League final. Because, okay, so if Madrid win the double, obviously they beat Juventus in the final, assuming that Juventus go through. But Juventus have won 2 and lost 6 Champions League finals.
Yeah, they're not good in the Champions League final.
No.
But,
no.
I mean, the question is, does that kind of stuff actually matter?
In some ways, I think it does.
Okay.
It's tough. But it could play a thing on your mind where you're like, oh, we've been here, we've lost again.
This is a rematch of 1998, isn't it?
This is a rematch of...
1998.
Was it or 2002?
Madrid, what, no, 2002 was
Bayer Leverkusen. Might have been. You're right. Well done. This is Zangol.
No, that was 2002.
Yeah, that's what I meant. 2002 was Zangol Leverkusen.
Right. 98, Peruzzi would have been there?
Possibly.
Del Piero, Inzaghi?
Yeah, they would have been there.
Lovely stuff. All right.
Let's move on to Syria.
Yes. So in Italy this week, Juve, since we're talking about them, had the chance to win the title, but didn't. In the Derby della Mole, the Turin Derby, they drew 1-1, ending a run of 33 home wins.
Like an actual useful unbeaten run. Yeah.
You know what? I mean, they were losing 1-0 until the very end, and Higuain came out with the goods and scored in the 91st minute.
Yeah,
of
what a goal. I mean, don't downplay it. It was so...
Higuain is another one of those where he looks like he shouldn't be playing football, but he scores so many goals. In the Champions League, he scored again like 2 or something. He somehow just ends with the ball in the back of the net.
Yes.
Like, I don't know.
It's funny, actually, because Higuain went to Real Madrid at the same time as Benzema, or about close, and they fought it out.
They did.
For that position. And Benzema won, and now they're both fat.
Yes.
Yeah, that's really all we learned from that.
I was going to compare Higuain's physique to Suarez's physique.
Or Rooney.
Rooney is close to Rooney.
No, Rooney is like...
On a separate level.
That's fair.
But listen, be fair though, have you seen the reaction of the Juventus players on the bench after they got that 1-1 against Turin? They were like celebrating as if they were so happy to not lose the derby. Whatever, it's not a big deal, but it was.
Because it would probably be really embarrassing for them. You know?
Well, it's also the local derby. I think this game usually does have a lot of fireworks.
But the thing is, Torino have never taken a point at this stadium. Like, they have at the Delle Alpi, but at the new stadium, at Juventus Stadium, never. And the other thing is that they were down to 10 men. So it really would have been embarrassing. I don't know if you saw the sending off, but Aqua got sent off for...
Aqua?
Yes. And he didn't water it down. It was a full-blooded challenge. But
Alex half a chance and he'll score.
Yes, he's the Higuain of the pod.
He is.
Wait, different physique. Right. But it was a full-blooded challenge, but he did get the ball. And Mihailovic just went absolutely bonkers.
Yes.
I mean, at the ref, at the fourth official.
But he likes to.
At Viali. Yes, he does. But it was crazy.
Moving on, Inter lost 1-0 to Genoa.
Standard.
Inter is shit.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
There we are.
It was a funny quote from Stefano Pioli afterwards. He said, "The players want to give more, but they're just not managing it."
I mean, sure, fair.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like every mom at like a summer camp. Like, yeah, you know, he's great, but like you can't really be too hard on him.
I wish the mob felt that way. Once they're going to, you know, ruin Inter players' lives soon.
Sure.
Well, they'd have to attend the games first.
Great.
Dzeko is having another phenomenal season. Top scorer in the Serie A, looking so good. The goal against
Every goal they scored in this game was precise, finish, like literally like a torpedo with a laser guide into the corner.
It was fantastic.
And not only that, Donnarumma also made like a couple of amazing diving stops.
In the first half, they were lucky to not be like six down.
Yeah.
He was making unbelievable stops. But Dzeko with the finishing, the right moment, the right position, everything was perfect about his game. Mo Salah was just killing it with the pace. He's so quick. And Sharawi's goal.
Your Egyptian boys did well in this game.
Twin pyramids.
I do want to you know, flag Roma's finishing in this game, because it was particularly amazing. Everything was like a curling far post, curling inside the post finish. And those are the best finishes that I like to watch.
It's true. And they needed this win because they lost last week while Napoli won, and they need to retain second place. The thing is, though, it looks like Spalletti is going to be off in the summer.
Yeah.
He is not... I mean, they're doing very well, but he's not particularly happy. He even said... Because the thing is, Totti just announced his retirement at the end of the season.
Yes. Right?
So after the game, after a 4-1 battering of Milan, the questions he got in the press conference were, well, why didn't you bring Totti on at 3-1? And he's just like, listen, I've managed here before.
Yeah.
I'm managing here now. It's the same questions for 10 years.
I'm not his agent.
And I need to do what's best for the team and not Totti. And he said, he actually said, if I could go back, I would never have come back to manage Roma.
Wow.
It is kind of amazing, though. Like, it just makes you think about how much control the media has over the mentality. Right?
Yes.
Like, if they just don't like the manager, they ask him all these questions and put him under all this pressure.
It's exactly what the English media do with England managers, famously.
Yeah, but they couldn't do it with Sir Alex for all those years.
Across the other side of Rome, I suppose, Lazio 7, Sampdoria 3.
10 goals. I mean, you got your money's worth.
Yes, very much so.
I think a couple of weeks ago, Lazio were 5-0 up in 29 minutes against Atalanta or something.
They're just smashing it.
Yeah, they've doubled their goal scored in two match days. Yeah. Napoli beat Cagliari 3-1. Mertens, another two. He's fantastic.
He's on fire. He's looking for a transfer.
Why do you say that? Has he whispered in your ear?
Yeah, yes, he had me on speed dial.
Did he get a stepladder to reach your ear?
Well, while Neymar was speed dialing me, I had another incoming call from Mertens.
Oh, so it was a conference call. You, Mertens, and Neymar. Thanks for calling us in, bro.
That all happened while Neymar lobbed the ball over the defender.
Sounds great, but you didn't get them on the pod, so that's one last thing for Serie A. Crotone, Richer's favourite team, because it sounds like croutons. They beat Pescara to make it 14 points from their past six matches.
Both these teams are names of food.
Pescara?
It's fish.
Yeah, sure.
What?
Which means that they have taken as many points from the past six games as they did from the first 29.
You know what? This is not the first Italian team to do this at the end of the season.
Go on.
The year 2000, there was a team called Regina, who did exactly the same thing.
Well, that was out of nowhere.
I mean...
That's amazing.
I remember
Believe it at your own risk.
I was watching Serie A weekly as a wee lad. And I was watching this team get possessed and beat Fiorentina week in, week out.
So the Leicester of two seasons ago or whatever.
Yeah. Well, 15.
Except these guys are still in the relegation zone.
Yes. Crotone is still getting relegated.
Yeah, so it's the equivalent of the United run, but in Serie A's relegation zone.
Yes.
Nice.
Is there any chance they can get out of that relegation?
There is a chance, but it's very unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else before we come back to this side of the world?
Let's do the six. So, you know how in the MLS Cup at the end of last season, Seattle beat Toronto FC on penalties?
Yes.
Vaguely.
Yeah. I remember it because it was the coldest night of my life.
I almost lost a few toes with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Minus 12 in Toronto that day.
It was horrendous. It was absolutely horrendous. Anyway, Toronto FC have exacted revenge. 1-0 in Seattle.
I'd say more than that.
No, it was just 1-0.
Was it exacting revenge, though?
No, I mean, it's obviously not on the same level, but, it was nice to get, especially because Vanni rested Jovinko, rested Betashore, rested Zavaleta, and Vazquez.
He's got a squad, mate.
He's got a squad.
He's got a squad depth.
He's pulling a Zidane right here.
He actually said today that this is the deepest squad in MLS history, bro.
Was he holding a skateboard?
Maybe.
But you know what? On a serious note, Toronto FC... started the season with what? I think they were one win, one loss, four draws.
Why on a serious note? I was having fun.
And yellow card, Mohamed. And now they've won four games in a row, and they're on top of the league.
True, because they did draw four games in a row at the beginning of the season, so they're making up four.
He just said that.
Oh, he said that. Sorry. Yeah. I wasn't listening. I was thinking about the fun.
That's the second yellow for Mohamed.
Oh, he's off. So late in the game.
It is. 2 minutes to go.
I know. Anyway, it was a really good win. It was a really good win, especially after beating who were the league leaders, Orlando, on Wednesday. To come to Seattle, an away game, three days rest. Sorry. There's a
Freudian slip.
Yes. 3 days rest, playing Seattle, who are a very good team, in form, not many injuries, and they ground out the win.
Another fantastic save from Fry from Altidore again.
He needs to sort off.
He needs, yes. Well, I mean, he did.
But what a hit by Altidore.
Altidore, man of the match. Again, he's been, I think, better than Jovinko this season so far. He's played really well. He got the penalty himself, scored it himself. And you know what? To grind out a 1-0 away from home, because we did talk in last season especially, we did talk about how in MLS, away games are just... There's no point.
You expect less of them.
Yeah, everybody just wins their home games, and that's how you kind of make the playoffs. Away games in MLS don't matter. They don't matter.
Yes.
But to grind out a 1-0 away to such a good team was fantastic.
Yeah.
And the reason they matter, I mean, you can make the playoffs by winning your home games and not doing too much else. You can. But the reason they matter is if you want to win the Supporters' Shield and like finish top. And there aren't that many things you can win in MLS, right? Yes. And that's one of them. So there you go. But I think the amazing thing was to do it with the team that they put out. So you had Hernandez, who I think made his debut, at least a debut
start. At centre-back.
At centre-back. Then you had Mavinga, who came in for his first start since the catastrophic performance against Atlanta. And then with no Vasquez, Giroud played the deeper role. Mm. Bradley played the more advanced role, which gets him out the danger zone, which is good, because he's sloppy.
Yes.
And then right and left wing back, Edwards and Morrow, which was nice.
You should see him try to eat a spaghetti bolognese, mate.
Who?
Sloppy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Third yellow for...
yes, yeah.
Mistaken identity.
But it was weird to see Edwards on the right side.
Yeah.
Because he is a left-footed player, and he has been doing well in that position.
He has. But
Hashtag squad.
Hashtag squad depth bro.
Yeah.
He's shown that he's adaptable, which is great. But then the really interesting thing came in the line behind Altidore, Delgado and Chapman.
Mm.
Chapman, young Canadian player. Nice to see him getting minutes. And Delgado, who is so versatile, he's played central midfield, he's played as a kind of backup right wing back, and now here you go in a kind of loose number 10 role.
Yeah, 3-4-2-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, good formation, actually. It's been working.
It's very on trend.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, TFC are one of the earlier teams to go three at the back.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a few seasons ago now.
They did it before the Premiership.
Yes.
I think that's where Conte got his formation.
Yes, he was a pupil of
Greg Vanney.
TFC are probably one of the most, if not the most entertaining team to watch in the league, and we're lucky to just have them so close.
Absolutely.
Alright, we'll see you all next week.
Yes.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.